Hello, this is Tiffany Powers from the Psychic Healing Power Hour, and I'm so excited to be interviewing Sophia Satyana for her new book that just came out, which is called My Perfect Husband's Life. Hi, Sophia. How are you doing?
Hi, Tiffany. I'm good. How are you?
Very good. I am so thrilled to be talking to you about this wonderful book that you just published.
Thank you, and I'm happy to have you interview me.
Oh, yes. Very excited. So why don't you give us a brief overview about My Perfect Husband's Life and let us know about that?
Sure. It is considered a memoir. It's nonfiction and a memoir of approximately the last year and a half of my life since my husband's sudden death. And it's a love story. He was the love of my life, my soulmate. And it's about the shock and the trauma of the secret life that I found out he'd been living, our whole marriage. And I discussed the different stages and emotions that I went through when I learned of these things in the secret life. And then the second part of the book is on the healing process and the different healing methods I used to heal from this.
Wonderful. That sounds very empowering. It sounds like when readers are reading your book, they're going to be able to really connect with these different emotional things that happen to you, but you're also giving them the tools to really help to heal their lives.
Yes, that was the intent.
That's amazing. So for you going through this process, what was the hardest thing that you went through during that time period?
Well, the hardest thing that to deal with was the shock, because I've never been shocked by anything in my life as I was in finding out about the secret life. And had I not found all the evidence I did, I would not believe it myself. So I think the hardest thing was the shock, because it happened in layers, the shock, because if I would have taken it all in at once, it would have been too much, I think, for me. And I found things out a little bit at a time, too. So going through the different unending, it seemed like at the time, layers of shock was actually the most difficult thing. And dealing with that and still living a life every day.
Oh, my gosh, I would imagine so. And were you able to use your healing tools and your spiritual tools to help you day by day as you were going through that?
Yes, and thank goodness I did have that foundation, because I'm not sure how I would have made it through it without it. But I did have a strong spiritual foundation. I do believe in God, the source energy, and I do believe that everything happens for a reason, and that there are lessons to learn from everything, and that there's a higher purpose to everything. And that did help me get through it.
That's wonderful. Yes. That is amazing. So for you, going through all of this and going through the shock and really going through this whole healing process, how do you feel like it's really transformed who you are as a person?
Well, I feel like I've learned very profound lessons from this. I feel like it has shook me to the core of who I am, and made me look at things like truth and the highest truth and trusting my intuition. It has really helped me to become strong in my virtues and convictions of who I really am and what I came here to do. And has helped me to step into that true power. Not that it's been easy or without pain, but the end result, the blessing in it, is that it has helped me hone in on my gifts and my skills and my intuition and to really trust myself.
That's wonderful. And when do you feel like you had an intuition that maybe something wasn't right with your marriage or with your husband?
Well, it's hard to go back and pinpoint a specific you know, day or year, but I would say in the last few years, for sure, I knew that something wasn't quite right, but it was a very vague feeling. And I asked him, because I felt like we had open communication, so I would ask him, I would say, you know, I feel like something's not quite right. Is there something you want to talk about? Is there something I'm doing that's bothering you? And he would always say, no, everything is fine. But he just didn't seem like he was himself in the last few years. And now, I mean, I didn't know what was going on at the time, but now I can see that. I think it all snowballed to the last few years where it got really intense with what he was doing and the amount of time he was spending on this other life. And that's when he got really challenged, and I think it was really hard for him to keep it straight or to keep it separate. I think up until then he could keep it separate and he could easily keep it compartmentalized in his mind on, okay, this is my life with Suzanne, this is what I do, I love her, and this is how we treat her, and it's good, and then this is my other life, and this is what I do. But I think it caught up with him in the last few years. So that's when I really, really started to notice that something wasn't quite right, but I thought it was like his health. I thought, well, maybe he's sick or not feeling well, and he's just not saying anything. Or maybe he's under stress at work, or just, you know, the normal things that you would think of. Not realizing what it really was.
Right. It was just kind of an intuition, and you weren't really sure what it was.
Yeah.
After he did pass away, what types of things did you discover or find out, and what types of things did you actually mention in your book?
Well, there were a lot of different things and details, and I actually know that he was having an affair with someone that he worked with for, I think, the last 5 or 6 years, and that woman actually did contact me over email about 48 hours after he died, saying how close they were and everything. And then she did come to the funeral. And there were little signs along the way after his death of, I mean, I found, you know, emails to her and her phone number and things written on a pad under his computer and just different things I found out that over time. So that was one thing. And then the other big thing was financially. I didn't really know what was going on financially, and I trusted him, and he was good with money. And we had separate accounts, because when we got married, we each had our own accounts, so we kept those accounts. So we didn't really have a joint account. And so, like, he had his own credit card, and I didn't realize he was making purchases and doing and spending money on these things, because he got his bills and he paid them, and I didn't know. So I found those after his death. I got a credit card bill, example, in the mail for many, many thousands of dollars that I had to pay that I knew nothing about. And he lied about what he made at work. You know, he told me he made half of what he was making. He was actually making double what he told me he was making, because I saw it in the checkbook and the check stubs and everything. So different things started coming to light. When I went to the bank to get access to his accounts, I realized my name was not on the house or the car. So that didn't make sense. And so I just, you know, I started putting these things together and realized that he was leading a totally separate, secret life that I knew nothing about, and that he hid for the whole 21 years that we were married.
My gosh, yes. He just had this, everything, financial, the separate.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
That's incredible. How do you think how could someone be two people? How do you feel about that? How can you be two people?
Well, I tried to figure that out for a long time. And I had heard of, like, split personalities or multiple personalities and different kinds of mental illnesses, but I thought, oh, no. I mean, my husband was, I mean, he was at the same job for 37 years. He came home from work at the same time every night. I mean, he was, like, the most dependable, predictable person I ever knew. And he was. He did play that part. But then he also knew how to play this other part where in between that, you know, like during the work week or the weekends, whatever, he led this other life when I was gone. And I've talked to a couple of psychologists and other people in the last year and a half and asked them what they thought. And it's pretty much agreed upon. And what I've read mostly about is that I think he had a split personality. I think it was just like a good and a bad, if you want to keep it simplified.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had a good side to him and a dark or bad side to him. And I think it was split like that. And when he compartmentalized it in his mind. So in his mind, he didn't think anything was wrong because he thought he was being good to me and loved me. And he did when he was that person. But then when he was this other person, he did whatever he wanted to and lied and deceived and all that. And he was able to keep it separate in his mind, which is what, I guess, if you have a split personality, that's what you do. You
yeah.
become that other person. You step into that other role. And he was very, very good at it. And I think he had it his whole life.
Yeah. Yeah, he must have, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what would you, if a woman right now that is listening or a man is listening and they're just feeling this intuitive feeling about their partner, their spouse, what would your best advice be to them?
If they're feeling an intuitive feeling like that something's not quite
yeah,
right.
Yeah, something's not right.
Yeah. Well, I would say, number one, to totally trust that you're not getting that unless there's a reason. And that was hard for me to trust that because he didn't follow the typical things that a person would do, like if they were having an affair, you know, like he came home from work at clockwork at 5 o'clock every night without fail, never wavered from that. You know, he didn't, you know, leave or not come home or any of those things. I mean, I knew something was not quite right, but I didn't have specific things to question. Other than that, I felt like something wasn't quite right. And so I would say listen to that because that's your first intuition, you know, that something is not quite right. And then try to get more specific. If you feel like it's financial, then start looking more at financial records. If you feel like it's another, you know, like there's an affair going on or something, just start, you know, looking at phone records, at emails. Is he spending any different time doing something else or not coming home or dressing differently or things like that? And start to question them and see if the questions make sense. I mean, in my case, they did. I did ask him questions. At one point, I even asked him if he was having an affair because I ran out of things to ask him. I mean, I think it was the last year or so he was alive. I just said, are you having an affair or something? Or what? You know, he said, well, no, why would you think that? I said, I don't know. I'm grasping at straws here. I'm trying. Something just doesn't seem right. And he said, well, no. I mean, that's the last thing you have to worry about. So, and he was very convincing when he said it. And I did believe that because, you know, the person that I thought I was married to wouldn't have ever had an affair. So, you know, but yet he was, you know, this other part of him was. And I was having dreams that he was having an affair. And I did not trust those. I told him about the dreams. I asked him about the dreams. And he discounted them. And so then I discounted them. So it goes back to you trusting your intuition, even if, you know, they say something else. Because you wouldn't be getting those hits unless there was something there.
Yeah, so it's like even if your spouse is denying it or your partner, it's important to even look further into those financial statements or emails or text messages or however, you know, need to look things up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you have, in your book, don't you have some type of checklist that can help people?
Yeah, at the very end. I mean, I talk about it a little bit on the things that I, you know, looking back, I should have done this, I should have seen this, you know, because hindsight is 20/20, of course. But in the back of the book, I have a checklist of, if you think that something's not quite right, these are some things to look at or look for, and also just some things that if you are married in, or even have a partnership and living with somebody, you know, I mean, things happen. People die, people get hurt, whatever. You should know, both people should know where basic things are and have basic things like a will and payable upon death on the accounts, so that you don't have to go through probate court like I did. And you should know where things are kept, and you should both have access to those at all times, because why not? Why wouldn't you? And I just trusted. And I didn't look at these papers. I didn't ask to see the paper with my name on the house. I mean, I just assumed it was done. I signed the paper. I filled it out a week after we were married 21 years ago. Well, he said he was going to take it to the court and file it, because he worked right next to the office building. So he says, I'll just take it down and file it. I said, okay. Didn't think anything of it. Well, he never did. He never took it and had it filed. So therefore, my name was never on it. So this was from day one. Yeah.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
So it's never, it's always a good thing to have, to just have that proof right there. I mean, if I would have asked to see that, you know, which I never thought of, then, you know, I would have created a problem.
You probably would have started really questioning things even at that point and being kind of confused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's great that you have a checklist. I'm sure that'll be really helpful for anybody reading the book.
Yeah.
It's really good.
So, as far as the book goes, what do you think will resonate with your readers the most?
Well, I think everybody will be able to resonate with at least some of the feelings involved, because I think everybody's been lied to, betrayed, maybe not necessarily cheated, but maybe that too. But, you know, if you're middle-aged or whatever, you've probably had, you know, something happen with all of those things. And so I think everybody can relate to those different feelings of feeling betrayed, being lied to. And I think it's more common than we realize, maybe not to this extent of his secret life, but I think that people will be able to relate to it, and that it could happen to me. It could happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was the most normal, average American pie guy you'd ever meet. I mean, he had Leave It to Beaver reruns that he watched on TV. I always used to tease him that he was Leave It to Beaver. I mean, that's how, you know, he made chocolate chip cookies. I mean, he was a good guy. I mean, so for him to go off the deep end and have this other part to him is, if the proof wouldn't have been there, I would have never believed it. You know, it's that astounding. So I guess it could happen to anybody. It's more common than we think, I think. To what extent is different, but. So I think people resonate than you think, maybe.
Oh yeah. Many people would definitely resonate with this book. What is the significance of your book title and the beautiful artwork that you have on your book cover?
Well, the artwork was done by an artist that I knew, and as soon as I saw it, I said, "Oh my God, I don't know what that is, I have to have it." And this was before I wrote the book or anything. And it's actually a phoenix bird rising, and she did it in such beautiful colors. That, I mean, they're my favorite colors, the fuchsia and dark blues and turquoises. They're all my favorite colors. And I just look at it. I bought the original painting and have it in the living room in my house, and it just gives me such strength and courage to look at that every day. And it's a phoenix bird rising from the ashes, which I think is very symbolic of my life in general, and certainly what I've been through in the last year and a half, where, you know, the bird goes into this hell type of fire and burns and resurrects and becomes this new baby phoenix bird and learns how to fly and soar higher than ever before. So it's like a resurrection and a rebirth of who you really are. And I feel like that's very symbolic of what happened to me, because I feel like I actually, in some way, that part of me of who I was died, you know, mm-hmm. with this whole thing. And I'm being reborn into this new, higher person of who I really am. And I don't know what heights I'm yet to go to yet. It's still unknown. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And the title, what is the symbolism of that, My Perfect Husband's Life?
Well, it is the story of my perfect husband, because I considered him to be a perfect husband and his life. It's not what you'd think when you see the title, My Perfect Husband's Life, but it's the story of what this perfect husband's life really was. And, you know, the perfect I put in there because I really did think he was the perfect husband, and everybody that knew him thought that also. But the life that he actually led was a duality, a story of light and dark, and this double side that he had to him.
Yeah, totally. Very ironic. So
mm-hmm.
as far as the book, are you planning on doing any other sequels or any other books?
I think so, yes. This story ended back in November of 2014. That's when I wrote this book. And so it had not even been a year yet since he had died. It was in January that he actually died of 2014. So it had only been 11 months, or 10, I guess. And so a lot has happened since November of 2014. It's been 7 months, I think, or more. A lot more healing has taken place in me. I have come to new understandings of things on a soul level, and why I picked this experience to go through, and just the deeper lessons that I have learned from it. And so I would like to write a second book or a sequel that focuses mostly, if not all, on that healing process and go into more detail. In this first book, I just went into a little detail on it, because mostly it was the story and how the story unfolded. But I would like to really spend time going into the healing process of this, and how you actually get over something like this, and how you actually can heal something like this and get to the point of forgiveness without holding on to any resentment or other negative feelings. Because I think that that's really important. And I think that a lot of people wouldn't know how to get past something like this.
And yeah.
Because it's not easy, but it can be done.
Yes, the information would be so helpful to so many people. And can you just give anyone who's listening maybe one tip on forgiveness, or something that helped you to forgive your husband that passed? And the situation.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the biggest virtues here that I've learned is forgiveness at a much deeper level, because I have struggled with it. And, you know, it's only been a year and a half, and there's still some days that I question it, but for the most part, I do feel like I have forgiven him, and I know on a soul level, I have forgiven him, and I have done that so that I can move forward, because I don't want to carry the heavy burden of unforgiveness with me, because then I can't move forward with my life. So I think the important thing here is to forgive, to move on, and not get stuck in the resentment, the regret, the anger, and to choose forgiveness for you. You know, it's mostly for you. It's like a gift that you give to yourself, so that you can be free.
Right. Yeah. Because it really, when you're holding all of that emotion in your body and trauma, it's really hurting you. It's not hurting the other person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for anyone that has gone through something similar to you, and they're in this process where they're kind of in that shock and trauma and they don't know what to do or what their next step might be, what would you suggest for them?
Well, I think that you need to have a support system. I think it's crucial. People that you can talk to, and a variety of people, so that one or two people don't get burned out. I know I had several good friends that really helped me through this, and I will always be forever grateful to them. And professional help is probably going to be needed on some level. And that, of course, is personal choice of what someone would choose to do. I chose to go more of an alternative spiritual route. Just that was my personal choice. And so that, I think, is really helpful. And to really be in and feel the feeling. And I know that that's hard, it's not comfortable, it's not easy, but I think it is necessary to really heal and move through this, to really feel the feelings and do whatever you can to heal and release them. And there's all kinds of things I talk about in my book about, I have a chapter on feelings, you know, about different artistic things you can do, like writing and artwork, and there's different body work things you can do, like myofascial work that helps to release the emotions. Just role play and pretend they're sitting on a chair next to you and talk through the different emotions and just allow yourself to feel the many different emotions, because there were some days where, my gosh, I think I went through 50 different emotions in one day, you know, starting with anger and ending with sadness at the end of the day. And each one of them is valid, and you don't just go through them once. I mean, the anger isn't just a one-time, one-day thing. I mean, there's stages of it and layers of it. Same with sadness. Same with the feelings of betrayal. You know, how things trigger you, and you just have to deal with them as they come up and know that you're supported. And it's just really important to feel and release them and not bottle them up inside, I think.
That's wonderful advice. That's so important. You're completely right. So how can anyone who's listening, how can they purchase your book?
My paperback version is available on Amazon for $12.95. And then the Kindle version is also available on Amazon for $5.99, and you don't have to have a Kindle. There's an app for Kindle now that you can just download to your computer, whatever device you have. So those two things are on Amazon. And then on my website, I have different e-versions of the book, like for iPad and Nook and things like that. So my website is and then it's the title of my book, My Perfect Husband's Life.com. And on there, I have a storefront on there, and you can, if you want a different e-version other than Kindle, you could go on there to purchase it. And all the e-versions are $5.99. And you can also, if you want to just do a test run the book, you can sign up for my newsletter and receive the first chapter for free and download it immediately to your computer. And it's also available on Barnes & Noble and other places too. But I guess Amazon is the probably most popular place.
Yeah, that's great. People are able to easily get it. That's great. Well, thank you so much for answering these questions and really helping to go explain the book and I'm sure anyone who's listening is really looking forward to reading this book that you've written.
Yes, thank you. It was my pleasure, and I hope that it helped people to, and if people resonate with it, I hope that the book would be of help to them. Yes.
Thank you. From the sounds of it, I know it will be a help to them. So thank you so much for your time, Sophia, and have a wonderful day.
Okay. Thank you, Tiffany. You too.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.